day is it? What year? Nothing else can be said about me. It can at least be said that I have a lot of fun amusing myself. Oh, hello, friends. At long last, the Mopod returns. Thank you for coming back. I hope you've not forgotten about me. I have not forgotten about you. It may seem like it, since I have not recorded a Mopod in well over a month. Things just got a little bit crazy with, well, we of course had the holiday shenanigans and brouhaha. The word brouhaha applies in many different forms for me this year. Then we had some family stuff come up, and then I was just too tired, sick, or lazy, or disenchanted to get around to actually recording an episode. But I am now back, kids. I hope this new year finds you well. We're doing all right over here. We've been fighting illness through pretty much the entire family. I've been fighting a badass cold. Connor has a wicked cold. We've had flu bugs and just general malaise. We had a death in the family. And it was, of course, a very hard thing for everyone to deal with. It was my wife's maternal grandmother. And really to add to her pain, she spent most of her formative years growing up in her grandmother's house. And so her grandmother basically helped raise her. So the loss of her grandmother struck her very hard. I think probably harder than when I lost my grandmothers each time. I think it struck her a little bit harder. She was trying to be the strong one in the family. Trying to be supportive for her mother and for her sisters, and it was difficult for us because I didn't get to see my wife for several days. I stayed behind to raise the mob and make sure everybody got to school and all that fine stuff, which did earn me some good points with the wife, and trying not to abuse that too much. The crazy part is that excuse me. There are certain times where I recognize my personal faults, which many would say are numerous. There are a great deal of them, and I would not dispute that. I often find ways of centralizing things, making things pertain to me when they maybe don't necessarily pertain to me. We packed in kind of a rush. The wife had come home for a day or two. We got everyone packed up and then headed back to my wife's hometown for the funeral for her grandmother. And as things often are, the world kind of got rushed and hurried around us. And as sometimes happens with us, things get overlooked. For somehow, some way, there was miscommunication between my wife and I, and my dress clothes did not get packed for the funeral. Because we had gone up on Thursday, the funeral was on Friday. As it would work out, my parents were coming, driving separately, driving the day of the funeral, and so they were able to pick up my clothes. But meanwhile, we're in the church, the family is gathered, we have a small little prayer, just the family, and a discussion of where the flowers go, and who the flowers are from, and whatnot, and everyone there is dressed immaculately in their Sunday best, suits, ties, shoes with a nice high polish. The women are looking demure and modest, yet beautiful. The children are all snazzed up. And then there's me. I am waiting for dark balance sneakers and a long sleeve Detroit Tigers t-shirt. And wanting very much to just find some place to go and hide. My wife, of course, is assuring me that no one's going to care. It's not that big of a deal, Matthew. That's not how they are. They'll understand. And I know that my clothes are coming, but I'm feeling incredibly self-conscious and feel like everybody in the room is staring at me because I'm dressed like I'm ready to just go hang out at the bar and not pay my final respects to this matriarch of a very large family. And I just feel like rubbish, and I have to make it a point whenever I talk to someone, my clothes are coming. This is not, we had a big mix-up. And then every one of her uncles that I come up and say hello to, every one of them I say, "Hi, nice to see you again." It shouldn't be nice to see you again. We're burying your mother. Oh, son of a bitch. And I'm just more and more on the spot, and I'm making me so much more relieved that I'm not wearing the clothes I'm going to be wearing for the actual funeral, because I know that I am now sweating through my Detroit t-shirt, and I cannot wait for my parents to show up with my clothes. So, my parents show up with my nice white shirt, red tie, black pants. Grab them, go into the nearest bathroom. Get the shirt on, tie the tie, no problem. I go to put on the pants. The pants are not fitting around my legs. I know it's been a while since I've worn these pants, but this just doesn't seem quite right. I looked at the pants, made sure they were the right size 34, before I put them on the hanger and hung them on the back of the door, where, of course, they ended up being forgotten and abandoned back at home. But these pants, the only number on the tag is 8. Somehow, someway, my size 34 waist pants got substituted with my wife's size 8 pants. Now, for a very strange, short-lived moment, because I'm very self-conscious about what I'm wearing, I actually considered trying to force my fat legs into my wife's pants. I didn't. What would have been less embarrassing? Wearing a Detroit Tigers shirt and black jeans to a funeral, or explaining to someone that there was a mix-up and you're wearing your wife's pants? Have I recorded a podcast in the last month? No. Have I really written anything in the last month? No. However, there is, as promised, a new book up for sale. That's right, kids. I finally completed the revisions to my sci-fi noir book. Came up with the title moments before I submitted it to Amazon.com. The final result? My new full-length novel, Wanderers, is now available through Amazon.com for the Kindle e-reader and the Kindle software available for smartphones, iPhone, BlackBerry, Android. You can also even get a Amazon Kindle program for your computer. And by the way, all of those programs are free. The book is not. The book is only $5. So please, spend a little money, buy my book, Wanderers. It's a fun book. I enjoyed it. I've been told that it does not suck. I always like positive reviews like that. So please go to Amazon.com and check that out. Also, for those of you who do not own a Kindle and do not have the Kindle service for your softwares, as of yesterday, my first two books, Our Own Devils, which I've been reading to you for the last 6 months, and also my bar book, Time with His Fools, became available through Barnes & Noble for the Nook e-reader. So, if you've been interested in buying and reading the books, but you don't have the Kindle, you have the Nook, guess what, kids? You have absolutely no excuse to go and buy my books. They're $5 from Barnes & Noble, just like they are through Amazon.com. So please, check those out today. In the meanwhile, back to the world of Malcolm McConnelly and Our Own Devils. In case you don't remember, we finished up with Chapter 31 before the Christmas break. Mr. Connelly had an interesting run-in with the mysterious and now revealed Vic Sinovec, and left him with curious questions. Let's see what he where he goes to find those answers. But first, a sip of coffee. I'd always loved playing hide-and-go-seek as a child. There's always something about the adrenaline rush of hiding in the dark, waiting. The exhilaration that came from waiting or expecting to be found, the feel of your heart thumping in your throat and your knees quaking as you waited, wondering if you'd be found. It was what made it so much fun. It was what made my somewhat brief childhood stand out. It wasn't until almost 1 o'clock in the morning when there was a click and a rattle at the door. I had been trying not to nod off in the darkness, so the sound made me jump slightly. The knob turned slowly before the door opened, bathing part of the room in a mix of moonlight and the harshness of a halogen streetlight before the man closed the door behind him and turned on the light switch. When he turned around, Jeff Carey found me standing across the room with my borrowed Glock pointed at his head. "Shh," I said softly with my left index finger pressed against my lips. "Come out, come out, wherever you are." "Connelly, what the fuck are you doing here?" Carey seethed. "First things first. Where's your gun? Right or left hip?" "Right," he said. "Two fingers, Jeff." Slowly pulled it out of the holster and tossed it towards me. With a very sour expression on his face, he did so. "Okay, now sit down over there," I said, waving the gun barrel toward a brown recliner. He did. "Good. I'm just here to talk a little bit." "Yeah, what about? How long have you been in Steven Sinovec's pocket?" "Hey, I don't know, is it, Jeff?" I interrupted. "Before you finish that statement, I want you to remember that I'm the one holding the gun here." Carey stared at me hard for a moment while the muscles in his jaw clenched and the veins in his neck became more visible and more defined. He swallowed audibly and took in a sharp breath through his nose. "For a little while now." I nodded and relaxed a little. I thought we were going to dance around the issue for a while longer. "Tell me about it." He did. "When I just got on the force, my partner was this guy named Frankie Baggio. Big old fat Italian guy. He'd been a street cop all his life, and that was all he wanted to be, you know? He was a hell of a guy, but every couple of weeks we ended up going to this dry cleaner's place. I never knew why, you know. Frankie'd always taken his uniforms to get cleaned at this place out by Waverly, where he lived, and this place was in the heart of town. After a few months, Frankie decided that I was a stand-up guy and told me what was going on. He was doing a little side work for a bookie." "Sammy Sinclair," I said, remembering the report from Mike. Carey nodded. "He wasn't out collecting debts or anything like that. A lot of what Frankie did was just keeping his ear close to the ground. Frankie kind of moved in a few different circles within the department back then, so if the vice guys were moving in on anything big, he'd know about it and pass the word on to Sammy. Every now and then, he'd have a problem with another guy trying to move in on his business, and he'd ask Frankie to help him out. Me? I tried to stay out of it. I was still very much the wide-eyed kid with the head full of thoughts of the idealist crusade. I was out to genuinely do some good and help the community, and that kind of all went by the wayside, I guess. What happened? He chuckled a little. I got bored, he said with an embarrassed shrug. Do you know what it's like to be a cop in this town? Spending all your time breaking up frat parties and pulling over drunken cheerleaders? It's like all you're doing is working to protect the face of the university football team. I became disillusioned. All I wanted was a little excitement to break up the monotony. So one day, I asked Frankie to bring me inside to meet Sammy. Frankie looked at me really weird for a bit before he said that I'd have to wait and see. I guess he kind of had to speak on my behalf to Sammy before he hired me on. What happened then? Was it all the adventure and excitement that you'd hoped it would be? He smiled sourly and shook his head. Nah, it was more of the same, except now it was just a little different. You know what I mean? There was this electricity about the job because I was dirty, on the take. The words struck Carrie sharply. Oh, come off it. Do you know how often I had to actually earn that money? Not very. And it's not like I was doing part-time work for Murder Incorporated or anything like that. Probably the worst thing we ever did was scaring Sammy's competition away. And after a while, he didn't need us to do that anymore. Because he had Vic, I said. Yeah. Sinovec had been working part-time for Sinclair as a collection agent and leg-breaker during his time off in the factory. I guess that over time, he'd proven himself as being more capable. I didn't understand it, personally. Whenever we'd brace a guy about keeping out of Sammy's way or turf, we always had the weight of the badge behind us. Maybe, but Vic has the weight of physical harm behind him, I said. That can often be a more persuasive element. Carrie let out a wry laugh. Yeah, I suppose you're right. How did it go over when Vic took the operation over? He shook his head and rolled his eyes. It was kind of a mess. There was this whole stink about Sammy handing it over to him. First, it was because the guy's not the least bit Italian. A lot of the guys that had been working for Sammy a long time took offense to that, I guess. Then there was this whole stink about it going to Vic and not to Sammy's son. Well, they were kind of grasping at straws at that one because everyone knew that Sammy's kid was in no shape to take over the book. Why not? Kid's gay. So what? No, I mean like really gay. He and a few of his friends used to do this drag queen show in some bar over down by the Haymarket. The kid makes Paris Hilton look like a heavyweight, so he's obviously not the guy to take over the family business. So Vic gets handed the keys to the kingdom. What was the backlash? A lot of the guys on Sammy's payroll didn't exactly care for Vic. He wanted to start expanding the business into different things almost immediately. A lot of the guys weren't on board. Different things? Yeah, he started moving into some extortion rackets. That was the first step, and he moved in on it fast. Within only a few weeks, he had his hand in almost a dozen businesses. And some of your brother policemen didn't care for that, did they? Carrie shook his head. No, they didn't. Helping some guy running a betting book wasn't that big a deal to them. Hell, they bet on every damn sport on the planet themselves, but once Vic started expanding, they started to feel guilty, like they had broken their oaths to serve and protect. So they bailed. Frankie, too. And Vic let them all go. But you stayed. Carrie was sitting down now on a sectional couch upholstered in gray leather. He had his elbow propped up on the arm of the couch and was constantly running his hands through his hair. He had been doing it for so long that his hair had become unkempt and slovenly looking. In fact, he almost seemed to be aging in front of my eyes as he confessed to all he knew about Steven Sinovac's operation. Why? He was quiet for a while as he mulled the question over in his head, his breath coming in and out of his nose in long, deep pulls. His jaw seemed to set differently, and the corners of his mouth dropped a little, and his eyes became heavy and sad-looking. Jeff Carey swallowed hard before saying, "I used to be married. She died." "I knew that, but I didn't say anything." His face brightened for a moment. "She was beautiful, man. I met her my third year at the university. She was stunning to look at, smart, everything. We got married right before I became a cop. She was working as a kindergarten teacher, and I was a lowly beat cop. We barely pulled down $45,000 a year before I started working for Sammy. Then she got pregnant. Suddenly, the bills started to pile up. We bought a house, had to get two new cars. Mortgage and two car loans really adds up, man. Now, I had to stay on after Vic took over. Hell, I needed more money than he was paying me, so I asked him for help. And he helped you to make detective." He nodded. "He told me that he really couldn't afford to pay me any more than he was. I'm pretty sure that was probably bullshit because I have a pretty good idea of what he was pulling down from those businesses. Anyways, he said he could help me out another way. A few weeks later, he called me up and told me to be at such a place at such a time and to be ready to work. So I did what he said. I showed up with a couple of beat cops at some house in the middle of the night and ended up raiding the meth lab. It was a huge deal. I got all the credit, got bumped up to detective with the pay grade and benefits therein. But that also put you in deeper with Cinevec. Yeah. Suddenly, I was beholden to the guy. Then a few months later, my wife died in a car wreck. Killed both her and the baby. Kind of went through this period of guilt. I was basically beating myself up thinking that if I had still been a beat cop out in a patrol car, I might have stopped the guy that ran into her before it had happened. Then it was go legit again. But he wasn't ready to let you out yet. No, far from it. He didn't have a detective on his payroll before, and now he did. Then he told me that the guys I'd busted on the meth thing were actually his. That was one of his new business ventures, meth. But those guys at the house have been stiffing him or whatever, so he let them get thrown in the hoosegow. People said, still said hoosegow, I thought. He said that if I tried to leave him, he'd get it leaked that I was somehow connected to those guys and all this shit. It was a nightmare. But having one detective on his payroll couldn't make up for losing all of his other contacts in the department. That's why, instead of just replacing them, he traded up. He started working on people that were a little more upper crust, I guess. His business had become quite a bit more diverse, so he felt he needed a little more muscle than a few beat cops. He started talking to judges and attorneys. He said the word attorneys with a little extra inflection. "Krantz," I said after a beat. "Yeah." I began to pace around the room and tried to run my hands through my hair, forgetting that I still had a gun in my hand. "It makes perfect sense. Cinevec kills Alex, dumps her body. He has Krantz use his power and influence as the county DA to have you assigned to the case. It's a low-profile case, and her family lives out of state, so there won't be any great public outcry to have the murder solved. In theory, it would have quietly faded away. But then I decided to get involved. Yeah, and that forced us to actually do something. Vic tried scaring you off personally. You had an airtight alibi, so all he could do was have Krantz basically throw you out of town for all the good that did. So you moved in onto Sean. Vic was the anonymous tip, I take it?" Carey shrugged and nodded. "Who says the tip even existed or needed to?" I sighed. "My ex-wife is up here right now trying to get him bonded out. She's just wasting her time, isn't she?" "I'm afraid so, Connolly. That doesn't mean I'm going to let this go." "I know. If the case officially closed, is there any chance that Krantz will ease up on me?" "Doubtful." I nodded as I stood in the middle of Carrie's living room and looked around while I tried to gather my thoughts. My gaze landed on a picture of Carrie and his late wife from their wedding sitting atop the entertainment center. She had been alone with a healthy tan and a beautiful smile and a lot of white teeth and a head full of shiny black curls. They looked beautiful and happy together with Carrie in his tux and his wife in her wedding gown. I thought of opportunities gone by the wayside and the road not taken. I'm going to fix this, Jeff. And you are going to help me.
Why should I? You know Vic is dangerous. We could both end up getting killed.
To free yourself of him. I grabbed the wedding photo off of the entertainment center and tossed it to him. He caught it clumsily and looked at it. And you're going to do it for her. There you have it, folks. Chapter 32 of Our Own Devils. Now available for Nook e-readers as well as Kindle e-readers. Please, by all means, check them out and tell your friends about them. It would make me very, very happy if you would do that for me. Also, be sure to go to the Facebook. Look up Mopod Podcast. There you can stay up to date with whatever meager offerings I have available to you. Also, you can drop me a line at mopod@live.com. Give me your thoughts on the podcast, your thoughts on the books. Email me just to tell me if I suck. Any news is good news, right? In the meantime, we are going to be back on schedule, so I will be back same Mo time, same Mo channel with Chapter 33. We're getting close to the end, folks. As a matter of fact, there are only 25 pages left. Maybe I'll get crazy and read all 25 pages in the next episode.
You don't know. You don't know.
The only way to know? Come back next week. See you, kids.